the howling. Nothing prepares you for Cairo. You can read books, watch documentaries, listen to other people's accounts of arriving at this gateway city between East and West, but nothing prepares you for the mayhem and sense of chaos. 5 days ago, I arrived in this sprawling, shambled metropolis and continue to feel very disoriented. My mind seems to have taken on the personality of the rambling serpentine coils of this city. I feel out of control as situations present themselves, and I stumble like a drunken man trying to fathom the meanings of the mundane. They just have a different way of doing things here, which is definitely contrary to a Western mind. We are so used to clearly defined arrangements, but here, everything is flexible and adaptable to change. Every question about the day's plans is replied to by, "No problem," meaning we will take care of it. After several days, you realize amazingly that they do. Peace, there is no peace. Every minute of every day, your senses are bombarded by an exotic cacophony of alien language, smells, and visions that are superimposed upon wailing electronic rhythms of contemporary Middle Eastern melodies. Then, quite suddenly, from out of this seeming pandemonium, you hear one of the 5 haunting calls to prayer that spirals up to marry the confusion into a rich and mysterious mandala. This collage of overwhelming sensory impressions is carried upon the heaving serpent of pollution that writhes through the zigzagging alleys and streets with scales of spangled dust. Methodically and incessantly, this serpent wends its way while shedding its scales of contamination, leaving nothing immune from its caress. It was from within this glorious mayhem that at 8 a.m. one morning, I took a taxi to the Step Pyramid of Saqqara, arriving at its remote location about an hour later. This site lies just outside of the fertile area of the Nile Valley, southwest of Cairo. Not bothering to wait for me to get out, my driver sank himself down in the driver's seat, put a newspaper over his head to shield his eyes from the sun, and told me he'd wait for my return. I emerged onto the lunar-like landscape and was immediately gripped by the peace and sense of solitude. After the chaos of Cairo, it was reminiscent of having a cooling balm massaged onto a fiery insect bite. The peace washed over and refreshed me in a rhythm of euphoric waves. I don't think I'd ever experienced a quietness quite like it. I was sure that I could literally hear a pin drop from yards away. The desert wasn't as I had imagined it. I expected sand, but found it was actually composed of boulders, shale, and pieces of rock fragments. I bent down and let my hand stroke across the surface and picked up a thin veneer of white dust across my palm and fingers. I walked towards the reconstructed entrance at the southeast corner of the complex and observed, even at this early hour, tourists approaching up the road from the valley. Amazingly, not even our presence disturbed the peace and rejuvenating qualities of the site. It was as though we were separate, insulated from the site by some invisible sphere. It was as though the timeless guardians of this necropolis shielded themselves from the contamination of modern man by creating force fields around the intruders. Like holographic images, we moved through the tumbled stones and left as much of an impact as light passing across the surface of a lake. Running the gauntlet between the locals and paying the traditional backsheesh, I entered into the shade of a shallow vestibule which had an opening on the far wall that led into the court of the complex. On the right-hand wall of this vestibule, engraved in the limestone, was a false door. The detail of this door was so accurate and precise that it even included the hinge pins and sockets. I remembered reading somewhere that it was through this false door that the Pharaoh's car would pass unimpeded as he traveled this funeral complex that was the replica of his kingdom. I shifted my attention to the left-hand wall and was confronted by another engraving. This was of two figures pouring what appeared to be water over each other. On closer scrutiny, I discerned that it was not water, but Angst, that timeless symbol of life. I began to walk on, but was suddenly stopped in my tracks by memory. I returned to the image of the two figures. I realized that I knew them. These ancient stone etchings possessed the physical characteristics and features of the woman who marked the arrival of the machine and the man of the ritual. Surely it couldn't be. The resemblance was startling. I reached out my hand and let it follow the lines of the engravings. As I did so, my mind recalled the experiences of those so long ago adventures, and in the curves of the etchings, I was bestowed a sense of arrival. I stood back, contemplating the scene, absorbing its essence. I wanted to be able to recall it as accurately as possible, so I could take relief from its essence long after my visit. A wave of tourists suddenly entered and passed by, bringing me out of my reverie. I took a final look at the wall and passed on. Walking further, I entered a colonnade of pillars, carved in the image of palm stems, and after passing through these, emerged into the great south court. Here I found myself confronted by a section of reconstructed wall, bearing a frieze of cobras symbolic of the goddess Wajah. I looked right and saw across the vast courtyard the beginnings of architecture, the stark stepped pyramid of Zoser, designed and built by the architect Imhotep. I contemplated on what might have been the origins of this man who was later made into a demigod by the people of Egypt. What power of imagination this man must have possessed. I say man, although we don't know for sure that he was a man or a woman. What were the origins of this individual's imagination? Maybe it wasn't imagination. Maybe it was knowledge already passed, possessed, brought with him from another place to bequeath it to the inhabitants of this region. If he did bring it with him, then from where? If this is the first known stone building erected on Earth. A group of European-looking tourists came from behind me, jabbering in a language that I didn't recognize, and passing by me, headed out across the courtyard in the direction of the pyramid. I decided to wait a while and allow them to get a reasonable distance ahead of me before heading in the same direction. While waiting, I walked west and came to a pit that I knew from the guidebook to be Zoser's southern burial chamber. As pharaoh of both Upper and Lower Egypt, it was required for political etiquette that he be symbolically buried in both kingdoms. The opening of the pit was fenced in for obvious reasons, but where I stood, there was a gate, and beyond it, a flight of descending stone steps. Looking beyond the gate at the first step, I was taken aback to see the image of a bat traced in the dust. My mind was driven back through a vortex of time, now seeming so long ago, to when I found the dead bat nailed to a gatepost on the occasion of my discovering the machine. I urgently looked around, feeling someone had approached me, but found myself still alone. My consciousness heightened. I took time to take in the details of the emergence of the pit. Suddenly I saw that it had the proportions of a double square. I heard the opening of the pit howl upward at the sky, speaking in a language of unimaginable age. It was a tumultuous howling of draconian arcane speech. Here I knew was the gate of Amenti, the underworld. In the long annals of human history, heroes like Orpheus and Dante had stood at such sites, contemplating the opportunity they had been offered, questioning the strength of their resolve to enter into the adventure zone. At this moment, I pushed open the gate, placed my right foot on the first descending step, erasing the image of the bat. As I did so, the heroes of history stood alongside me, and I joined them in their timeless fellowship.